Today on Main Calling, slow fashion. Fashion may seem frivolous, but it is a $2.5 trillion global industry, and it produces a lot of waste. Every tourist t-shirt or cute new pair of boots is likely to end up in a landfill someday. It's estimated that Americans generate 16 million tons of textile waste each year. There are numerous other concerns around the fashion industry, including the fossil fuels used in making polyester and nylon, the treatment of many workers, and difficulty recycling. But we all have to wear something, right? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we delve into the slow fashion movement. Maine, as you might imagine, is a hotspot for people who are thinking about the clothes they wear in new ways, from sustainable fibers to repurposing outfits. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downey's communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We all have to wear clothes, right? Can we do it more sustainably? We'll learn more about the movement that is known as slow fashion and how all of us might play a part. Joining me, Cindy Eisenhower, who is a professor in the University of Maine, Department of Anthropology and Climate Change, and the School of Economics and Mitchell Center for Sustainability Solutions. And Rebecca Goodstein is Senior Retail Environmental Activism Manager with Patagonia. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you think about when you think about the clothes you buy? Do you think about how they were made, what material they're using, what impact they have on the environment or the supply chain? Or are you just starting to be aware of this movement? You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. Cindy, I'll start with you. I think anybody who's paying attention at all to the news knows that there are problems with fast fashion, those cheap and stylish clothes that are so easy to order online. However, I suspect many people don't know the scope of this issue. Can you characterize that how big of an issue this is and how it has changed and accelerated in the past few years?
Sure, happy to. Yeah, I think it's hard to underestimate the scope of the problem because it exists in a lot of different realms, right? So we not only have the environmental impact of this kind of take, make, waste cycle, right? Which pumps a lot of textiles through our systems only to dispose of them very quickly after use. And that comes with a lot of problems, right? We've got carbon emissions, we've got the pollution associated with the production of the garments. And then of course, all of the impacts that come with disposal. But it's not just the environmental, it's also the social aspect associated with the labor, right? So if we're trying to make clothes as cheaply as we can, that oftentimes means going to a labor force that is relatively disempowered, right, and has to put up with a lot of unfair working conditions and unsatisfactory compensation and maybe even pollution. And then it also comes at a huge economic cost, right, where it's literally wasteful, not just in the environmental sense, but also in the economic sense of taking things that still have good value, still have good life, and could be cycled back into our economies and used, for more time, that just literally go to waste, oftentimes incinerated or put in landfills. So we lose that value when we could be keeping it.
Yeah, so I know that there are a lot of elements to this, what we're calling slow fashion movement, as opposed to the fast fashion movement. One is paying attention to the kind of fibers used in the clothing that you're wearing. Two, obviously, trying to, you know, wear clothes for a long time. Like, you know, we used to, what your grandmother told you, take care of it and it'll last for a long time. But another is reusing clothing in new and creative ways. And I'm going to turn to you, Rebecca, because I think it's counterintuitive that a clothing company that makes money selling clothing is now involved. And I know that Patagonia is not the only one, that there are other clothing companies. I believe Levi Strauss is doing the same thing. That is, they are embracing this idea of returning and reusing clothes. Tell me how that works and how it's profitable.
That's a good question, Jennifer. Thanks for having me today. Yeah, at Patagonia, we say we're in business to save our home planet. And as a company that makes and sells stuff, that's a real challenge. And so we're really looking at all the different ways we can approach our environmental responsibility. And that includes things like looking at our supply chain and trying to innovate what I call upstream, measuring our environmental impacts after our products are made to help inform our reduction strategy in the future, and getting our customers and our community and our consumers along with us and treat them as partners for folks who may want to buy Patagonia products, but we can ask them to recycle their product when they're done after they've reworn them and handed them down and repaired them. And we will take back recycled or worn products. We have a worn wear campaign that encourages customers to buy less and to repair what's broken and then to choose products that are designed to last and be recycled. So it's definitely something, you know, a tension that we're always trying to look at.
Yeah. So Cindy, I want to ask you a personal question. I hope it's okay. When you go shopping for clothing, I'm looking at you Zoom right now. You look very stylish. How do you think about, it's a hot day and I would really love to have a new tank top to wear on a day like this, but something I can also wear to work. And how do you think about the clothing you buy? And then how do you go shopping? And then what do you do with clothes that you're not wearing anymore?
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to answer that in a really literal way first. And then I want to take it into like a policy realm too. In terms of my own personal choices and the decisions that I make, you know, I've spent a lot of my career kind of studying sustainable consumerism and how do we reduce the impact of these take-make-waste systems. So for me, I'm always looking for clothing that is well-made, right? And whether that's new or used, you know, it's good stitching, it's high-quality fabrics, something that I can keep in my wardrobe for a long time. And in fact, I do keep things in my wardrobe a very long time. And then I repair them if I still like them. And I'm trying to reinculturate this idea that repaired clothes can be cool, right? that you can have a patch and that's okay. I also spend a lot of my time in reuse markets. As you know, Jen, I've studied reuse here in Maine, and just send a quick shout out to all of my research participants who are out there maybe listening. Thank you all for your help. But we've come to understand that reuse has real strong benefits, and it's not just the environmental benefits of, you know, keeping clothes in circulation longer, but it also generates some really great value here in Maine that circulates locally, some good social value. So I do shop secondhand quite a bit. When I need to buy something new, I try to buy things that are high quality, though I also recognize that oftentimes higher quality goods are more expensive and they're not accessible to everyone in the same way. So that's kind of the second part of my answer, is that I also work hard to advocate for more sustainable solutions that it don't just rely on individual choice, right? They don't just kind of saddle the consumer with like, this is your issue, you need to fix it. But how can we move toward policy solutions, move toward collective solutions that get us in a more sustainable place as well?
Okay. Rebecca, I want to build on something Cindy said. I've heard about a new movement called visible mending. Tell me about visible mending. Is that doing patches or taking embroidery thread around a hole and making some cute design, or is it something, does it include that and also something more?
Yes. All of it. And I'm so glad you asked. We like to say repair is a radical act. And so instead of mending something subtly or something that you can't see, we use stitching that might be in a different color than the product, or put a patch on that's in the shape of something fun and snazzy to really draw attention to it and, you know, have the clothing speak for itself and say, this is something that's well loved. This is something that we're keeping out of the landfill. This is something that we care enough to repair. And this repair speaks to that. So it's really fun. And my colleagues who work in our retail stores have a really good time when people bring in products, because Patagonia will repair them for the life of the product for free. And so we have a lot of wonderful customers who bring things in to try to get zippers repaired or patches. And it's fun. They have a good time with the customer, and it just makes you love it so much more when you know that you've taken that extra step to keep it out of the landfill.
Well, let's talk about, let's have a bit of a reality check here, because I'm going to talk to you first, Cindy. I am one who is often taking shoes in to be repaired. I really like Steve, if you're listening, the shoe repair guy, who expert, I shouldn't call him guy. I mean, he's so talented. But he is a rare species in Maine. I think in southern Maine now, only two shoe repair shops left. I think the rest of the country, huge deserts of something like shoe repair shops, as well as alteration places you can get alterations for clothing. People don't sew like they used to. People do not learn home ec in school like they used to. I know how to sew. My mom taught me, but I don't have time. So there is a bit, Cindy, I'm wondering about how, as a society, we need to support and figure out a way to bring these trades back up. Not just, you know, because even if you want to be the kind of person who buys something at a thrift shop and has it tailored to fit you, even if you want to get your shoes repaired, it's not that easy.
No, sadly, it's not. It takes a lot of time, and we're all time pressed, right? And sadly, we lost our local cobbler here in Bangor not too long ago. And it's a challenge. I think that there are some challenges here, right? There's the issue of, is the market there, right? Will people respond? And I think there have been some studies that have been conducted to look at, you know, what's the potential advantage of, for example, routing some of our sustainability dollars and sustainable programming toward reuse and repair, toward repair. And it's showing some really positive benefits, right? If you can channel some of those monies into training people, we're seeing that people are largely open to it. And you can provide some incentives too for the market. So I know that Maine is not Sweden, but for example, Sweden gives tax breaks to folks who decide to repair things rather than replace them. And that would certainly help, things like that. But yeah, I think we have to make it more convenient for people. I think over time, as resources become more expensive, which I'm sure they will, it will make sense. But until then, it'd be really great to get that infrastructure going. And it's a job creator, right? It's a community creator, it's a job creator. And one I think that that's largely been undervalued to date. So if we can help to support job training around repair, I mean, I'm sure it's not just shoes. I'm sure many of you have probably struggled with like small appliances, right? Or they should be repairable. And so we could do things even like repair cafes at the community level, where we train other people how to repair and help people learn how to do that again and take back those skills. So
calling in now is U.S. Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, who represents Maine's 1st Congressional District. Thanks so much for calling in, Congresswoman.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I understand you recently started something called the Slow Fashion Caucus. This is brand new. What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, first, thanks for doing the show. It's just tailor-made for Maine, no pun intended.
Yeah.
A caucus in Congress is a little bit of a sort of an interest group. Sometimes it's friends of a whole country, the Friends of Ireland, or sometimes it's a specific area that you're hoping to raise the profile, the attention, find like-minded members who might want to work on policy-related issues. So we launched this because it crosses over so many concerns, and you've talked about a lot of them today. The tremendous amount of waste and the growing amount of waste that's ending up in our landfills today, the impact on climate change of the fashion industry now. It is the fastest growing part of our landfill, and most clothing ends up as methane gas, so it's just contributing to the problem. The issues related to offshoring labor, trying to bring back manufacturing to this country, reduce some of that impact, and also more domestic production. It gets into sustainable agriculture. Maine's a state that's traditionally had a lot of sheep farming. We have an increase in the amount of hemp farmers, which is also a potential fiber. And let's face it, when you come from Maine, we're not highly fashionable, but we value our clothing. We tend to hold on to our clothing. But also we have this sort of, Yankee idea of being thrifty and reusing. And so much of what you're talking about today, Mainers love a good bargain at a thrift shop. They love to say, they've owned their, plaid wool shirt for 25 years, or they got it from their grandfather, whatever it is. So we are looking at everything from the recycling of fabrics to enhancing domestic manufacturing, to really just talking about with consumers, what are you demanding from the clothing companies? Are you going to clothing companies that will take the clothing back and repair it for you? Are you repairing your own clothing? Are you reusing? There's so much to talk about. Obviously, I could take up your whole show, but it's a great thing to be working on. And, honestly, talking to a lot of my colleagues about this and asking them to join from both sides of the aisle, some of them are already working on legislation on all different parts of this. But many of them, we have to wear somewhat of a uniform to work every day. It gets a little exasperating. And many of my colleagues, are pointing out, oh, yeah, I get my things from this wonderful thrift shop. Whether it's in Washington, D.C. or their home state, or they rent their clothing for fancy occasions, or have really thought about a lot of this so that we're not adding to the problem.
Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, I'm wondering, though, you said many colleagues are talking about this. Are you also getting some eye rolls as people say, really, we're going to talk about fashion and slow fashion when there's so much else going on in the world?
Oh, 100%. You get eye rolls about pretty much everything in Congress. But for most people, I would have eye rolled myself had I not, I'm the ranking member on the Interior and Environment Appropriations Committee. So we oversee the EPA, and that means our recycling system in this country, which is completely broken. And when I realized how much clothing is also contributing to our waste stream. And we all know if you live in a small Maine town, landfills and the landfill issues are a big cost to all of us. They're a big problem. And also climate change is a big concern. So when I say to some of my colleagues, here's the kinds of things we're digging in on. Or we're saying, 70% or upwards of 50% of the textiles in your clothing is now made from fossil fuels. If we're really serious about climate change, we can't just talk about plastic straws and reusing plastic bags. We got to talk about the clothing that we're wearing, too. It has huge interest with the young people. From my colleagues who have joined the caucus and who have been posting about this, they've all been coming up to me on the floor and saying, oh, my gosh, you should see the response I got from people in my community or, the kids in the local high school who are doing a project on this. So absolutely, it starts with the eye rolls and people say, don't you have some serious issues to work on? But let's face it, climate change is a very serious issue. And we can't just say we're going to talk about the insulation in your home and what kind of car you drive. We got to talk about it all.
Yeah. So before I let you go, I want to ask if you, Cindy or Eisenhower earlier in the program mentioned that Sweden has tax rebates for people who repair. And I'm wondering if there are any kinds of incentives of any kind that Congress is talking about that you think may have a chance to incentivize people to in any way, whether buy clothing that's made of in America of sustainable fibers or reuse clothing, anything that's in the pipeline.
Very good question. And Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro and I have got a General Accounting Office study that we're working on right now. It should be out in the fall. We're looking forward to that, to kind of giving us better facts and figures about what the numbers are right now. But part of what we're doing is analyzing all of the foreign legislation that has been put into place, as well as any domestic legislation in states or what's pending before Congress. As she mentioned, Sweden and France. France has, a $25 or $30 credit if you take your clothing to a cobbler or to a tailor to have it mended. As people were saying, you know, that just sort of helps to put some of those small businesses back in business because people are using the credit. Most of the current legislation before Congress is on a much bigger scale. It's about bringing manufacturing back, supporting manufacturers who use sustainable fabrics. So it's sort of on a bigger scale, but we'll be looking at what's being done in foreign countries and what we could do. So if I'm lucky enough to be back in Congress on the next session, we'll be working on sort of a more comprehensive piece of legislation based on what's going on out there on a global scale, but also how can we encourage individuals to do that? And maybe how do we support some of those reuse, recycle shops that are going on? Again, you know, great work going on in Maine. And I just encourage anybody, you know, hit our website if you want to look at some of the policy we're already working on. But more importantly, if you have suggestions for us, we'd love to convene some people in Maine to get the best ideas. We're always ahead of the curve on things like this. And we just want to be very supportive and learn from other people about what we could be doing.
Congresswoman Pingree, thank you so much for calling in. One of the founders of the Slow Fashion Caucus in Congress. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about what sustainable fashion means and how it aims to benefit the environment. With me, Rebecca Goodstein, who is Patagonia's Senior Retail Environmental Activism Manager, and Cindy Eisenhower, who's with the University of Maine. She is a professor of anthropology and climate change. She is also UMaine's Mitchell Center for Sustainability Solutions. You can share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Rebecca, before the break, we heard from Congresswoman Pingree. What would you like to see the Slow Fashion Caucus do?
Well, I was very honored to be included in Congresswoman Pingree's launch of the Slow Fashion Caucus at the Capitol Building in Washington, D.C. And one of the tenets of the caucus is to build education and awareness about the circular economy. And during the launch, a lot of people who were speaking, it was kind of liberating. They would say, "I'm Rebecca Goodstein and I'm wearing a hand-me-down dress," or "I'm wearing shoes that I thrifted." And so I think this is something that feels like it's happening, and we just have to normalize it and make sure that everyone knows that this is something that's accessible to everyone. So it was a very fun moment that it feels like it's gaining speed and momentum.
And Cindy, I want to go to you with something that Congresswoman Pingree said. She said, "We in Maine are ahead of the curve." And you've actually studied that. You have data to show that Maine is ahead of the curve when it comes to the reuse culture, right?
I do. I think it's really exciting, actually. So I'm a cultural anthropologist by training, right? So I study culture and cultural shifts. And I remember when I moved to Maine 14 years ago now, just being really surprised and delighted by all of the different opportunities for reuse that I saw throughout the state. And it's only become more vibrant since I've been here. But yeah, we have some great data to show that, you know, on a per capita basis, Maine has more reuse establishments. They tend to be strong regardless of what the rest of the economy is doing. So we can, you know, a lot of folks would assume that when the economy is weak, the reuse sector would grow. Maine's is consistently strong. And when we started interviewing people and trying to find out why, it's very much a cultural issue, right? It's something that people have grown up doing. They love doing it, right? That's the word that was most used when people were describing it. And studies of development and culture change show that when you have programming that's consistent with people's cultural values, it works really well. So Maine has a great opportunity here to kind of get ahead of the curve and think creatively. And we already are, I would say. I've recently been in Portland and in Presque Isle and noticed some great new shops popping up, vintage stores and repair shops and zero waste refill stores. So lots of things are kind of coming along the pike. And I think Maine really does have a great opportunity to lead in this regard.
Joining us now is Kate Bergman, who is co-owner of Peace House Studio based in Bath. Thanks so much for calling in, Kate.
Thank you, Jennifer.
So tell us what you do at Peace House Studio.
Well, my husband and I started this company about 4 years ago, and we make children's clothes out of organic cotton that are durable and colorful and unique, and we offer a buyback program for our clothes. So we'll offer store credit to a customer once the clothes are outgrown, and we'll take them back in any condition, and we will refurbish them and mend them and add patches and resell them.
Wonderful. And I imagine when you say in any condition, since we're talking about a messy population, that is a challenge mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah, we've seen items come back that have been eaten up by a washing machine. We've had people hand us items at a show that have just had a drink spilled all over them. We'll take them in any condition and we'll do what we can. We haven't had to throw any away yet.
Oh, wow. Do you find that people purchase your products because they want to support this idea of sustainability? Or do you think it's because the clothes are so cute?
Definitely a little of both. I think, and also people like to support local companies. And we, so I think that there's three elements there, but the clothes are pretty cute. You'll see them all over the state.
Is there any way to gauge the difference you're making?
I have a binder full of a list of all the things I've taken back, and it's, you know, we've got hundreds of things out there that have been out twice or three times, and I don't know, I guess there's some data there that I could analyze.
Twice or three times, wow, good for you. Kate, thanks so much for calling in, and Kate Bergman with Peace House Studio. We're going to go to Heather. Heather's calling in from Goodwill in Gorham. Hi, Heather, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to call in and say Goodwill is so grateful to Congresswoman Pinkry for launching the Congressional Slow Fashion Caucus. And I wanted to remind folks that our local Goodwill is a nonprofit based out of Gorham, Maine, and we help keep more than 50 million pounds of stuff out of local landfills each year. So when people donate to their local Goodwill, those items stay out of local landfills, and the revenue goes back into Goodwill's workforce programs, which upskill Mainers into in-demand jobs. Right now, one of those programs includes upskilling Mainers into renewable energy jobs. So I would just encourage everyone to try to buy used and donate back clothing when they no longer need it, because reuse is such a big part of the solution to the waste fast fashion is causing.
Heather, I want to ask you, I'm so glad you called in, because I want to ask you a question I've asked people at Goodwill before, and I think the answer is fascinating. We just heard Kate Bergman say they'll take clothes in any condition. And I have to say, I have had clothing that I've donated to Goodwill that I've thought, really, with this stain on it or this rip, do they really want it, or will people be insulted to be seeing me donate something that's damaged? What is your answer to that?
Oh, it's such a good question. We would prefer to accept things that are in good resaleable condition so that we can then invest the money from the revenue back into our workforce programs. Thank you for asking that.
Now, that's really interesting, because in the past I'd heard any condition because you had a rag program. Is that no longer the case?
We do have a rag program. So when an occasional T-shirt slips in that has a 5K logo or a stain on it, we are happy to take the collar off and the sleeves off and the pockets off and make them into rags that we sell in all of our stores. And we also sell them to boatyards out of Rockland and some artists up in the county. But our preference is that people donate gently used resaleable goods so that we can keep things circular. If we get stuff, we are able to recycle them, all textiles and cardboard and metal. But yeah, thanks for the question.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Heather. I really appreciate it. Now calling in Samantha Hoyt with A Gathering of Stitches. Thanks for giving us a call, Samantha.
Hi, Jennifer.
So tell
I'm
us
happy
how
to be part of this conversation.
Yeah, tell us how A Gathering of Stitches is involved with the slow fashion movement in Maine.
Well, I produce sewing retreats, four of them a year. Two of them are garment sewing retreats, and the other two are quilting. And I bring in nationally recognized teachers to share their knowledge and skills on sewing from scratch, sewing from used goods, mending, repairing, dyeing, all sorts of ways to stretch the life of textiles so that we can keep things out of the landfill and that we can also have some sense of accomplishment and pride in our wardrobes instead of buying them from the mall.
I had a fun time poking around your website, and I'm wondering if there's on these retreats anything that's the most popular thing to do, the thing that people want to be doing with their clothing. Do they bring old articles of clothing and say, I want to gussy these up?
Well, it depends on the week. Thank you for looking around the website. I have a teacher who comes the first week of August who does a class we call refashioning, where people bring garments that maybe didn't quite fit them right or that they've worn a long time and there's some wear that needs mending. And then they conceive of new ways to wear those clothes by adding new fabric or taking away fabric or somehow reimagining how it looks, that garment. We also each week have swaps, clothing swaps. So people bring things that they have that either a la Goodwill don't fit but are still in great usable condition, and we move them around the community instead of putting them in trash or at Goodwill. This just keeps them from getting out of the closed circuit. It leaves all the textiles in our community, which is a lovely thing. This year, my most popular class by far seems to be a class that happens the first week of August that will be fitting pants. So everybody wants to make pants this year.
Oh, that's great. Well, Samantha, thanks so much for calling in. Samantha Hoyt is with the organization A Gathering of Stitches and also Maine Stitching Retreat. So I have so many emails coming in. I'm going to go to a few. The first, I'm going to start with an email from Caroline. What if every home had a recycling receptacle for clothing like it does for paper and plastics? Would this prompt local councils and governments to take the issue more seriously? Cindy, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I mean, there are proposals out there for EPR for textiles, right? Which stands for Extended Producer Responsibility, right? Which asks the producers of the textiles to help take either managerial or financial responsibility for the end of life care. I know what the materials managers that I've worked with for several years would say to that we don't have the transportation capacity to pick up another waste stream. But I do think that there are some great solutions for take back. And if folks understood the kind of just the sheer volume of textiles that are out there, I think that would probably make a huge difference in a lot of people's minds, right? Just to see how much is moving through our system, for sure.
An email here from Rob. I find that very little clothing produced today is of the quality it used to be. I still wear jeans purchased 20 years ago. Slow fashion is good for sustainability, the environment, and the pocketbook of Mainers. And Rob, thank you for that. I'm going to go to Rebecca with this because, Rebecca, you represent Patagonia. And Patagonia clothing is wonderful, but it is pricey. And I think that's a conundrum many people find themselves in. I was looking through some of the most beautiful brands of clothing produced here in Maine, and I don't know about you, but I don't feel comfortable spending $260 on a shirt that I might spill on and not wear again. And so I'm wondering if you have thoughts, Rebecca, on just this reality that clothing that's going to last is really an upfront investment. And when people are facing the kind of inflation they are today and the kind of housing costs and the salaries are often not keeping up, help us navigate this.
Yeah, it's a conundrum. And I think that's one of the reasons I am especially proud of our Wornwear program, which does allow our customers to bring in their products that they may have bought new, worn for 5 or 10 years, and bring them back to the store, and we'll give them a store credit. And then those clothes are washed and repaired, and they're sold on the Patagonia website for a much lower cost. And it makes it more accessible. It allows people to have pride in wearing something that is used, and it does keep things out of the landfill. For new product of Patagonia, there are a lot of different, I used to work in our retail store, and I loved when people said, why are your clothes so expensive? Because this was such a great entree to talking about how our workers are fair, our supply chain is fair trade certified. So our workers and the folks who are sewists get paid well. We donate 1% of all of our sales to the 1% to the planet, where we can give it away. So it doesn't mean new Patagonia product is accessible to everyone, but it is an interesting, every every garment, every product tells a story. And I also like to think about cost per wear. That's how I justified the 15-year-old jacket that I bought. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is such a splurge. I wear it almost every day.
Right. Cost per wear. Learned that from my mom. I am going to go to an email here from Susan. And oh, by the way, Rebecca, I have learned a new word today, which is sewist. Not sewer, not seamstress, sewist.
I learned that from our repairs team.
An email here from Susan. I have many old, circa 50 years and more, dresses and blouses. Many are made with beautiful fabrics, silks, and laces. If no one wants them to wear and no vintage store takes them, they would be wonderful sources of fabric for quilters or craft people. What's a good place to donate such pieces to? I'm going to put you on the spot, Cindy. Do you have ideas for Susan?
Well, gosh, yeah, I mean, I can think of a lot of things. One thing you may consider, Susan, is to think about local theater groups who are oftentimes repurposing older pieces and redesigning them. So that might, if you're interested in the theater, that might be a good option. And of course, thrift stores, there's something to be said about the thrill of the find, right? And about supporting the people who spend the time and energy and research into, you know, going through and picking some of these really valuable things out of those streams and using them, whether it be for redesigning things or whether it be to sell on other platforms, for sure. We actually have documented quite a few folks, especially young people here in Maine, that are making their living this way now, right? By going out and looking through the bins and looking through the racks and then reselling online. And it's become a really interesting profession. So yeah, in terms of where specifically, I don't want to advantage any one specific place, but I think that there are a lot of great options.
Okay. And I want to just say that also social media, this is my addition to this, is can be a great source. I had a whole collection of buttons from my mother and grandmother, and even though I would like to think that I would someday use them, the reality was there were hundreds of buttons and I was not going to use them in my lifetime. And I put them on one of the Facebook pages that is a buy nothing Facebook page, and people were thrilled to take those buttons. So social media might be something, a good use for social media, someone might try. Email from Lynn. My advice, buy good quality classic styles and wear them as long as possible. I'm still wearing clothes like this 25 years after I bought them. The savings have bought me many other things that I value more. So thank you for that, Lynn. And on that note, we do need to take another break. We're talking about slow fashion on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, slow fashion, why a growing movement is focused on sustainability. Joining me, Cindy Eisenhower, who is an ecological anthropologist and UMaine professor, and Rebecca Goodstein with Patagonia's environmental programs. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can find us on social media or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Cindy, something really important we haven't talked about yet. We've sort of talked a little bit about the thrift stores around Maine, but this is really a big trend among young people. And I'm wondering, if you think this will stick with them as they age. And two, I want to ask you about, I have heard people say that they are really not interested in wearing a garment somebody else has worn, that something about them, frankly, grosses them out. And so I'm wondering if you can address that sort of attitude, the wrinkling of the nose of like, not really, I'm not ready to go there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this was one of the most surprising things in our study, I suppose, is we started with interviewing brick and mortar shops. So folks in the reuse sector that had, antique shops or vintage stores. And their assumption was that young people weren't as engaged. But then when we did our survey, or a statewide survey in the state, we found that young people were very engaged. They're just operating in different ways, right? And part of that has to do with internet culture, right? So a lot of the resale and reuse infrastructure is now on platforms that a lot of young people are using. So like Patagonia's Warnwear, you know, engaging in that way, but also through these resale platforms like Depop and Mercari and Poshmark, or even the rental types of groups. And I think part of that is that a lot of them have learned about some of the negative impacts of fast fashion that we've been talking about, and are kind of jaded by this idea that, you know, obsolescence has been planned and has been a very intentional strategy to sell more. They also exist in a time when they're just inundated with stuff, right? They see their parents and grandparents trying to deal with just, you know, decades of mass consumption and accumulation. So I think that that has, you know, started to make a bit of a generational shift in how people think about used goods. For a while, there was a serious stigma there that was attached to the idea that that reuse was really for low-income people who couldn't afford something otherwise. And that's clearly not the, so it was seen as dirty and something other, right, from a cultural perspective. And there are a couple really great studies out that I'm happy to send a few links to papers if, okay, now I sound like a professor, but there's some.
You can put them in the comments on our Facebook page. How's that?
Okay. Sure. So there are some really great studies, though, that are kind of showing this shift in mentality. And that's not to say that there aren't still some people out there who don't think of, you know, use things as dirty. But I do think as a general, there's some good data out there to suggest that that's really shifting. And you can see it just in how different generations respond to questions like that about stigma. So, and of course, now that folks are more aware of the environmental benefit, I think that's also helping to shift things too.
An email here from Susan. I stopped buying Patagonia products because of their use of fleece. The fibers end up in the ocean. Could you address that? Rebecca.
Yes. So to just expand a little bit, we realized that Patagonia's fleece was shedding microfibers, which we were one of the biggest contributors of microfibers. And so we have, there's a lot of different things and different ways that we are addressing this. We have this product called a guppy bag that they'll give you when you buy a fleece product that you wash your fleece in, and it collects the microfiber. We're investing a lot of money in figuring out how to make product, obviously, without, that doesn't shed microfiber. But we worked with Samsung to redesign a washing machine that captures microfibers. And one of Patagonia's core values is to use business to inspire solutions to the environmental crisis. So we're working with a lot of our peers to figure out how to stop this huge problem that we unknowingly were a contributor of for so many years. So thanks for flagging that. It's something that we are working on.
Going to go to AMK in Scarborough. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I used to work for Timberland, and I worked in their legal offices and in supply chain as well, and saw the amount of things that would happen in the manufacturing process, including the amount of fraud and fighting the fraud and how much money it costs, aside from just general manufacturing. And I've always wondered, what would happen if we just stopped making clothes altogether? Like, do we actually really need any more clothes on the planet? If we're talking about what to do with them and disposing of fabric, why don't we just stop making clothes and wear what we got? Thank you.
That is the kind of conversation, Cindy, I suspect you could stay up all night talking about, right?
I'd love to. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's a really interesting question, and be great to have that experiment. I don't know that we'll convince a lot of manufacturers to do it, but I do think that there is plenty out there. I think we know that, right? It's a problem of distribution and it's a problem of cultural preference. But it's a great question. And I don't know what would happen, but I can guarantee that we would see more cobblers and we would see more. what word did you use, Rebecca?
Sewists.
So I'm sure that some of those professions would pop up very quickly and we'd see more redesigners. If only we could make that happen.
AMK, thanks so much for your call. Roberta Sear says, I used to do alterations as a side gig during retirement, but have recently stopped due to customers' low expectations of the cost of repair. a used pair of pants costing perhaps $10 is going to cost at least another $10 to rehem or replace a zipper or even more to refashion the article. Folks expect the job to be done for a couple of dollars and are disillusioned when I tell them the real cost of my labor and materials. So, Cindy, we're talking about changing expectations and attitudes here.
Yeah, I think so. But yes, for sure. But I think at a deeper sense, this is also a reflection of the idea that the really low cost new pants and the low cost new shirt are artificially priced, right? So we have all sorts of externalities, right? The cost to the laborers, the cost to the environment where those clothes were produced, the emissions that are put in the atmosphere for future generations to have to deal with. So I think, yes, we can make individual choices and we can change and be willing to pay more for those clothes, but we can also support representatives and policies that you know require some of those externalities to be included in the price, which is, I think, probably a better long-term solution. Not to make things more expensive for consumers, right? That's not the intention, but to make sure that we are not just passing off costs onto future generations and consuming more than we need in the current time.
An email here from Allie. We started a group about a year ago of repair events called Portland Repair Meetups, where folks come together about once a month to fix all kinds of things, including clothing, darning sweaters and socks, replacing zippers, patching jeans, and more. It's all free and a fun, low-stakes way of building community while holding on to things that still have a lot of value. We're on Instagram at ripe_for_repair. And we also are always happy to have new folks join us. Also right now, there's a group of people around the state strategizing on how to grow the repair sector, including the repairing of clothing. For anyone who's interested, send an email to Vanessa Berry, vberry@nrcm.org. So thanks for that. That sounds really interesting. We'll go to Sally calling from York. Hi, Sally. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention a wonderful book that I found at my library a couple of years ago called Mend, A Refashioning Manual and Manifesto. And it is very, very inspiring about taking care of clothes, all about different fabrics, tools you might want to have. And it's just full of inspiration. And I loved it so much, but it was so thorough and had so much in it, I thought, well, I've got to have one of these myself. So I have my own copy, and it gives examples of stitches you can use to hide, amend, or applique, or all different, very inspirational things that you can do, as well as tons of practical information. Yeah.
Sally, thank you so much for the recommendation. The book Mend, A Refashioning Manual and Manifesto. Speaking of mending, Rebecca, Patagonia will mend if you're a customer, right?
Yes, we have something called the Ironclad Guarantee that if you have a Patagonia product, we will repair or replace it for the life of the product. So come down to Patagonia if you have a beloved jacket that has a rip or you just want to chat with my retail colleagues about replacing the buttons. It's something we really stand behind our products and try to make them last for as long as possible.
Betsy on Facebook writes, I love repairing my clothes. Bought a device called a speed weaver that allows you to patch small holes in your clothing. It's definitely a visible repair, but they're beautiful. And I'm proud to wear my repaired clothes as a statement on sustainability. So thank you for that. Michael writes, there used to be a very popular show exclusively featuring items bought in thrift shops for many years. There were prizes in many categories, including most fun, most stylish, most outrageous, etc. The show is unfortunately not held anymore that I know of, but it was always the highlight of the summer. And Cindy, I'm wondering if you know, I know there were a few around the state. Are any still going on?
Shows?
Yeah, fashion shows. You know, that's okay. And I want to ask this question. Maybe, Rebecca, you can take this one. I'm not sure. This is an email from M. I like clothing made with rayon, but I've ordered t-shirts from two reputable brands that I'm allergic to. I found out that rayon can be made from different materials. Do you know anything about this? And so isn't rayon made from wood pulp? Cindy,
I am actually not sure. We use a lot of organic cotton, and I think we are phasing out our rayon. I'm not entirely sure, but
Cindy, do you know the answer?
I don't for sure. I thought rayon was a petrochemical. I thought it was a petroleum product, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't want to misinform people. Look it up.
So we'll have to have another show and talk about rayon. So let's see here. And then we'll end with this one. Gigi on Facebook writes, I decided in 1989 to not purchase new clothing as a way to reduce textile waste. Except for underwear and socks, I purchased only used clothing or sew on my own. I try to use natural fibers. I haven't found a non-nylon solution to elastic, though. I weave, spin, and sew as a form of enjoyment, but it also makes me acutely aware of what goes into making a garment. So, Gigi, thank you for that. And that's a great way to end our program today on Maine Calling. And thank you to our guest, Rebecca Goodstein, Patagonia's Senior Retail Environmental Activism Manager, and Cindy Eisenhower, a professor of anthropology and climate change at the University of Maine. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find our past shows and sign up for our newsletter at mainecalling.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're talking about Maine's rural youth and the challenges they face. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.